Great. This meeting is now being recorded.
All right, Gavin, I'll hand it over to you. We only have one agenda item, and then I have a couple of small housekeeping items to bring up at the end of the call, but I'll let you guys get your discussion going now.
Okay. Thank you. Did someone just join?
This is Jody, Gavin.
So, oh, hi, Jody. So, some of us were delayed because of the RDAP pilot call ran over a little bit. So we've got homework assignments in from four people. So that's Dot, me, Andy, and oh, is it just three? Okay, we've got three. So we've got, so Scott's list of RFC 2119 style requirements, Andy's set of requirements, and then mine as well. So I don't know, how does the group feel about kind of just going through them one at a time? Or I don't know if that's necessarily going to be the best use of our time. Maybe we can start with Scott. Scott, is there anything you'd like to kind of talk about in summary of what's currently on screen?
Sure. So Scott Hollenbeck here. I did find it interesting as I looked at Andy's and Gavin's input to see that there is quite a bit of overlap here, which is a good thing. We tended to use some slightly different words, but I think we're capturing many of the same concepts. Before we dive into this, though, I did note that there were two of us using the supplicant word, and Steve had pointed out over the weekend that it might be considered a pejorative term. Steve, what I didn't say on the list was that the term came up during Tuesday's conversation last week when Benedict had suggested that this was the term that the EPDP was using. So if we are eventually going to publish this in some form, I do think it's important that we come to agreement on how we describe the end user or the supplicant as the EPDP describes them. What do folks think about that?
Thank you, Scott. I'll let everybody else respond.
Well, I'll throw in my two cents. This is Andy. I think it's kind of an odd term, and my understanding is that its basis is in religion, and I'm not sure that's probably a good idea.
The reason I reacted to it is only partly the religious aspect, but it has a very strong connotation that the supplicant is a person of lesser status and is sort of almost begging for a favor as opposed to sort of a peer, and it's places. Well, I guess that covers it. So now that just may be my particular interpretation of the term, so I leave it to everybody else, but I just thought it was a very odd term to use since there's other terms available too.
Steve, so Scott here. So which term would you suggest that we use?
Well, I can imagine several that I don't have any strong feelings about the choice. Applicant, requester, two that come quickly to mind.
This is Gavin.
Go ahead, Gavin.
Sorry, thank you. So I would be happy with applicant or requester or any of those phrases, but I do think it's important that if we can get consistency between what we're doing and what the EPDP are doing, I would rather I'd rather be consistent than be, and I hate to use this phrase, politically correct. So I totally accept. I was just looking on the Oxford English Dictionary about the origin of that word. So
yeah.
Seems to comes from. Yeah, it has kind of weird origins, but I have no strong feelings either way, but I do feel that
it's important. Yeah. A third alternative is querier, which is not a very commonly used term, but it seems to me clear and mm-hmm. neutral. But I agree with you that syncing up with what the EPDP can ask them, you know, where the term came from and if they have strong
yeah.
feelings about the term. Anyway,
what I'll do is I'm going to make a note to ask Benedict, because obviously he's on the EPDP, so he can potentially answer this question.
Yeah. The picture I have of a supplicant is that he's on his knees asking for something.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's the term I think comes from University of Oxford. So it's someone who's like pleading to have their degree granted them by the university. So, and I think it probably does literally that they would have been on hand and knee at some point during the process of becoming a graduate.
Anyway, thank you, Scott, for raising the issue. We should move on to more
sure.
sensitive issues.
Sure, no problem. I'm not necessarily going to read these. You can all see them. But the way I approach this, I tried to capture some thoughts here about authorization. And you notice I didn't say anything about, you know, the system must be able to determine if the applicant is identified or authenticated, because I think those are implicit. In order to be able to perform some kind of an authorization step, you have to be able to identify and authenticate the querier, the end user, or, you know, whomever is submitting this request. So we know that there's this notion of authorization. The system also has to be able to process queries from, you know, people who are not authorized. So this gets us either into, you know, the general public who will not submit a query with any form of credential to be verified, but also those folks who may submit a request and, you know, they may find out that they're just not authorized to see what they're asking for. And that means we kind of have to figure out what they should get in response. A partial response, an error, and I think they're both possibilities. We did discuss this notion of the responsibility for the authorization, you know, being centralized within ICANN. We also talked about the possibility of delegating this authority, so I tried to capture that. We talked a little bit about attributes, you know, what types of things need to be associated with an identity that might inform an authorization decision, so I tried to capture that. Notion of multiple authorization classes, there will be varying levels of access depending on who you are you know, what your query purpose is. Let's see here, blah, blah, blah. Current internet standards have that. Synchronous processing, asynchronous processing, distributed data, logging, system performance. That pretty much captures all of it.
Thanks, Scott. Does anyone have any questions for Scott or any comments on specific items? Okay, well, I guess that there's a general agreement then on Scott's items on this list. Obviously the main list is there. If there are further clarifications that might be needed or, perhaps more, Steve, is there something you wanted to say? Okay. So maybe we can look at, the next, set of input, which is from me. So I was looking at this at, from a kind of maybe not a kind of less technical perspective, and thinking more about how this would work from a kind of user perspective. and from a bird's eye view of how the system would work. So what I was thinking of is kind of reinforcing the idea of having two tracks. So an RDAP interface for, as it says in the first token, an RDAP interface for pre-authorized machine-to-machine purposes, and then a web-based interface for exceptional requests. We've mentioned, I think we're kind of going over well-covered ground here, talking about, you know, the authentication process, which would be federated. There could be multiple parties performing the authentication. And then the authorization process, which happened inside of ICANN's purview. One of the things I wanted to flag as a possible useful tool for us is an internet draft by Mario Lafredo of .IT, which allows an RDAP server to, or an RDAP server to respond with partial responses to queries. So the client can signal to the server using a URL query, set of URL queries, the specific fields that it wants in the response, and then the server just has to respond with those particular fields that it's asking for. I think that might be a useful thing for us to have in the toolbox if we need a way, for example, for clients to identify the data elements that they're looking for. And also potentially for ICANN to signal to the upstream servers, the registries and registrars, which data elements to provide. I think that's a useful thing when you're thinking about the principles of data minimization, for example. I don't think it's enough on its own because we still need to kind of capture a way of encoding the purpose of the query. But I think it certainly gets us part of the way there. Any thoughts on that?
Yeah, this is Andy. So as I think about this, I wonder if that might be adding a little more complexity than is necessary. Can you all hear me? All right.
Yes.
The reason I'm saying that is because, if the user queries the service, they're going to get the data that is according to the authorization or the profile that they're supposed to get. And for them to signal, you know, I want more or less data seems to me something that's unnecessary. I doubt they would ever signal they want less data than they're authorized to get. And it doesn't make it doesn't work for them to actually say no. I know I'm not supposed to see physical addresses, but I really want to see them, so I'm going to put that in there. So it seems to me that we should probably go for a simpler model where they get the data that they're authorized to see, and it's up to ICANN, and ICANN's going to have to do the filtering anyway, so we should just let ICANN do that. I hope I was clear and not just mumbling all over the place. Yeah.
This is Crocker. Let me weigh in here. Seems to me that I'm in strong agreement with this. Let me add a few clarifying things. When the query comes in from somebody, the only reason why there should be an explicit mention of the purpose is to log that and put that on the record for possible auditing or investigation later. In general, I would expect that most queries will have a kind of standardized purpose, either implicit in who it came from or one of a small set of choices if the system is going to have a way for somebody to say, well, I'm from this group where I have this authorization, and among the choices that types of queries that I want to make or response profiles I'm looking for, I want this one in this case. If there's any exception, and I've been now looking at some of the policies that different groups actually use, there are exception cases where there's a form to be filled out and it's handled the slow path, if you will, where somebody has to look at it, that's a whole other matter. So I would imagine that at most, the purposes would either be, I guess, three choices. One, it's totally implicit in the fact that the query came from a particular person. Or two, is from a very small set of preset choices. And third is it's other, that is, you know, kind of an exception. And then there's a whole separate form to be filled out and a whole separate procedure to be taken care of, which is really an authorization process in some sense can be removed from the query process and turned into an authorization process. Did I make any sense, and did that help, or did it make things worse?
This is Gavin. I think it made perfect sense to me. I put this in point number five just because it kind of popped up on the regex mailing list, and I thought this might be useful for us, and I wanted to just capture that. But I think you and Andy are both right that the data elements that are going to be returned in the response really are determined solely by the purpose for the query rather than being sort of thing that the queryers could specify themselves. I don't know about whether on the ICANN to contracted party channel, whether there might be something of use there. Again, for the purposes of data minimization, my concern there would be how that might facilitate profiling. So where if there's a requirement for the contracted parties to not know why information is being required, because if they do, then it makes them liable for misuse. Just having ICANN query all the data and then do the filtering itself would probably be the only feasible way to go. I think this is something that's been really talked about already. But if Francisco wanted to confirm that, that'd be useful for me. Or not. Jody.
Gavin, did you ask a question? I cut off there for a second.
Sorry. The only smaller area of thought to me that remaining on this was whether the partial response system might be useful when ICANN's telling contracted parties what data it wants. But my concern was, would that expose some element of risk because it would allow the contracted party to profile the request misuse that information or expose themselves to certain other risk?
So I'm not a lawyer, but I'll play one. What I would gather or guess, I think guess is the right term here, is that any PII they give out, regardless of what the profile is for authorization, puts them into this area of better or worse legal jeopardy. And so I can't imagine that there's a situation where they give out one set of PII versus another set of PII, and the issue is any different. So I hope that made sense.
Yeah, I think it makes sense to me. Yeah, thank you, Andy. Jody's got his hand up. Do you want to say something, Jody?
Yeah, can you guys hear me? Just making sure.
Yeah, you're fine.
Yeah.
Okay, so I guess I have a couple of questions or points to make, and I'm sorry to jump in the middle here, but you know, number one on here is causing concern for me. You know, pre-authorized machine-to-machine purposes. That seems to me that could be used to mine the data to say, hey, I found one domain name that's bad. Now give me all 30,000 domains that were registered yesterday. I need all the PII data so that I can get these, you know, I can compare them all and find out what this person has done. I'm very concerned about number one. And one of the concerns too is that, you know, the admin email for the IRTP, we don't use the admin email anymore. And the registrars are trying to get a policy change to never having to need that again, because we feel it's a better way to perform transfers. So I'm concerned about pre-authorized machine-to-scene response purposes that are not reviewed by ICANN for every lookup. Remember, we're looking at PII data, and each one of these letting this out is a cause for concern of liability. The second thing that I wanted to point out is I'm curious, a question that I have is for registries and registrars not to know who is asking for the data and the purpose for the data. Now, what has continually been said is that if registrars ask for that data, then they will be liable for giving the data up or the misuse of it. And I'm not sure that ICANN is willing to sign a paper, you know, saying that, you know, registrars will not be liable for any data given to ICANN. And I think that will completely, you know, blow up this model, basically. And I'm concerned about that. If from the last memorandum that I read from, I think it was January 14th, stated that that registrars, registries, and ICANN are all independent controllers, which means we are all responsible for the data that is given out. And there is no blanket of indemnifying registrars or registries based on that memorandum. And that's huge. So as part of that, I would want the purpose, and I would want to know who's asking for this data as a registrar. I think that's all I have to say for right now. Thanks.
Think about that for a second from the registrar's point of view, and I'm not a registrar, so somebody who has that experience should reply. But what is the processing load on the registrar if they have to actually look at each request and go through a some sort of decision process?
What are you asking, Steve? How much is that going to put on us?
Yeah, I mean, now you're talking about human intervention for every single request.
Yep.
Careful what you wish for.
Yes. I understand, and I understand. Be careful what you ask for, but we have to respect fines and legality and somebody being put in jail.
Sure, but there are different ways to slice that. But just a quick reality check: how much are you going to have to charge for registration in order to be able to support that level of activity?
And that's to be determined, Steve. How much would we have to charge somebody asking for the data for that?
Well, that's one way to do it. I would think you just charge for registration process, but you could also charge for requests, I guess. That would be another way to defray the cost. But instead of things that are down in the microcent, per request, you're going to be into the multiple dollars per request.
Yes, that's one way to look at it, Steve, and then that would really be on the requester to make sure that they really want the data. Because it will cost.
I think, and certainly Jody's point is very, very eloquently put. I wonder though whether we're kind of straying out of the scope for this group, because we are really looking at, I think we have to kind of put legal and policy questions aside and really focus on the technical, challenge that we had in front of us, because the whole point of this group is to put together a proposal for a technical solution that can then be reviewed to determine whether or not it's viable from a legal and policy point of view. When we talked in Washington last week, the idea of pre-authorized queries, whatever those queries might be, was something that I think there was general agreement in the room was something that we should allow for, even if it turns out that the set of allowed purposes is a null set. So my feeling is that we should still allow that and design a solution that allows it, even if the ultimate result is that from a policy and legal point of view, it's not feasible. Andy has his hand up, so perhaps Andy, if you have something to say.
Yes, thank you. You just took the wind out of my sails for most of what you just said there, Gavin. But I do want to point out, I think Jody actually came up with a requirement that hasn't been listed on any of the sheets that we have so far, and that is for the registry to know who the querier is. I believe that during our meetings last week, Benedict, and I don't want to put words in his mouth, so hopefully he can correct me if I'm wrong, but there would be a concern that the actual identities of the like law enforcement being exposed to the registries may be an issue. So maybe what we could do is bring back this idea of pseudo-anonymous IDs, and that when the query goes from ICANN to the registrar, some sort of unique ID for whoever the querier is passed along. And if there are ever any issues about auditing or whatnot, then that can be used to do down in the That was really what I wanted to say.
Thank you, Andy. That sounds like a workable solution for audit purposes. I guess it's really, again, we're escalating or kind of out, we're going out of the tech area into the policy area by wondering whether this would be acceptable to the contracting parties. But certainly from a technical point of view, that would be pretty straightforward, wouldn't it, really? I mean, there are various ways we can do that in HTTP in order to kind of pass that information down to the contracting party or up to the contracting party. Any more comments on my input? Then is Andy's document in here as well? Here we go. Okay, great. And can you, would you mind doing the same thing as Ms. Wolf? Okay.
No. Yes, thank you, Gavin. So I think the first section, I broke mine up into must-haves and then kind of nice-to-haves, and I don't think the first section of the must-haves are to be, I don't think they differ in any way from what Gavin or Todd have already done. Where I kind of maybe left the reservation.
Yeah, and you've gone quiet. Um, Andy, yeah, Andy, you're not making any noise. Just give Andy a little while to see if he can reconnect or get his audio back.
This meeting is now being recorded.
Okay, we're back. And for the record, this is not my fault. Just because Ram's not here doesn't mean it's my fault because it happened. I don't know if there's any more comments that are or questions that are coming up. Oh, sorry. We haven't really got into Andy's document. So maybe I'm afraid, Andy, I think we lost you pretty much right at the very beginning. So maybe if you wouldn't mind just rewinding and starting again about halfway you got into it before you realized the sound was gone. But if you could walk it through.
So I'll start again. And hopefully it didn't disconnect because I was being long winded or anything. So So I think the first section of my requirements in the must have are pretty much in line or very much in line with what Gavin and Scott already put out there. Where I kind of deviated was in section 3, which is kind of the nice to have. And there's really two things going on there. As I thought about logging and how that would work and how auditing would work, as Benedict said, that you know law enforcement can't have or doesn't want their investigations to be interfered with, and so if it's being logged, and those logs are publicly available or in any way made available, then it could, interfere with their investigation. And so I thought about, you know, how this type of auditing would work. And it seems the best way to do that is to have, the logs exist and the logging will go on, but it's between ICANN and the identity provider, to do any auditing and to verify, you know, who's doing what. As far as what the public can see, that doesn't mean the public can't see anything, but, they certainly can't see the individual queries that would definitely interfere with some investigation. And so I thought that, what the public could see is, you know, ICANN could have some higher level stats about what's going on. Nothing that would, show the hand of any investigation, but, you know, enough to give the public some confidence in that the system is working. And I don't know what those are. I'm not that imaginative. But it seems like, you know, at least total number of queries is something that people might be interested in. I don't know if that will, if we want to break that down into TLD or what. That's certainly something we can discuss, or we can have the policy people discuss it. The other thing is, and this came up in the meeting last week very briefly, was about non-repudiation. And so if someone were to abuse their power of doing these queries and they were to get caught, we want a way of saying, no, you know, it was really you who did this, or, you know, share credentials. And so we really need to make sure that the system is not abused, or it would be nice to have a way to say that the system was not abused. I don't know if this is a must-have, but one of the ways I thought about would be some signing of the queries by the querier or the user or whatever you want to call them. And that would be transmitted to ICANN, and ICANN would also have the keying material, or the identity provider would have the keying material. You could do a chain of trust with some signatures, and ICANN would only forward queries that are signed and verified, and also would log those signatures. So in case there is any type of auditing that needs to go on, a reconciliation of the audit, they can do that. That's where I am with this. And hopefully the conference call didn't end.
No, I got all of that. I think everyone else did too. I can see that Scott has his hand up. So, Scott.
Sure. Thank you, Gavin. Scott Hollenbeck here. Hey, Andy, just a question I sent to the list earlier. Unfortunately, I can't see your document where this came up, but it had to do with like distribution of end user identity.
Uh-huh.
Right. I think your document says something along, if you could scroll that down, where is this? No.
So, Scott, I think the question you sent to the list was role information is not to be transmitted to ICANN, oh, by ICANN to the registries or registrars?
Yes.
Yeah. The reason I put that in there, and thanks for asking about it, is it just seems to me that it's unnecessary. The data will be transmitted from the contracted parties to ICANN, and ICANN's the one making the authorization, or should be the one in a very simplified model making the authorization step. And so role information, I don't see it as necessary. The other thing is that there is a potential for when you're transmitting that role information, there's a potential for the registrars or registries to say, well, no, for that role, I'm not allowing that. And I don't know. It just, to me, it seems like it's more complication than necessary. Now, I mean, I did say earlier in the call that Jody had a good point that they may want to know who is querying them. But I think that's more of we could pseudo-anonymize that. That's more really for I think for the purposes of understanding, you know, what's going on with the data. Such as if they see, I don't know, they see 10,000 requests from the same ID, they may want to go, well, wait a minute, maybe there's a hole in the system or someone's not living up to the rules as we understand them, that type of thing. Does that make sense?
Okay. All right, yeah, so if I understand you correctly, what you're suggesting is that the contracted party would not necessarily see the identity or role of the end user, but we would see that we're getting queried by ICANN, correct?
Yes, you would see that you're getting queried by ICANN, definitely, but also we could do where ICANN passes the anonymized ID of who's querying,
yes.
And you can keep track of that, yeah.
Okay, all right, very good, thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay, I think that probably done on this document, so that covers all three documents that have been submitted. I don't think there's any reason why, if people have feature lists or requirements that they haven't been submitted yet, that they couldn't do so after this date. There's no hard deadline for this. So if people have further thoughts on this, who didn't get stuff in before the start of this call, then by all means, please go ahead and submit them into the mailing list so we can all review. Scott.
Thanks, Gavin. Yes, so Scott Hollenbeck again. Now, this does beg the question, though, of what do we do with these lists going forward? I could certainly see some value in attempting to harmonize them, capturing the bits we have in common and perhaps coming up with some consolidated representation of all this information. What is the plan?
Yeah, so that was actually the next thing I was going to ask you is there any agreement in the room to try and consolidate these three down into a single document that represents all of the things all of the things that we've put together, so that there's a one place we can point to as these are what we feel is the features and requirements for the system. Andy.
Yeah, I agree. You were just asking the question. I think it would benefit us if they were boiled down into one document. The reason I suggested this exercise is so that in case anyone had any, they came away from our 2-day discussion and they had any differing ideas, just to make sure we're kind of all on the same page. And it looks like we are. At least in my opinion, I think we're kind of congealing around some very basic ideas that are the same. And so I think it would be beneficial if we had just one list. And I'm grateful for Scott for volunteering to put it together.
Thanks, Andy.
What was that noise?
I can put it together, or Scott, if you want to, or since you and I are work near each other, we can get together and do it if you want. If no one else has any objections.
Jody has his hand raised.
Yeah, all I would do is encourage everyone to take a look at these three lists and have any other requirements they can think of. I'd like to review the list again and make sure that we've got all the requirements that I would be concerned about. Thanks.
Yeah. So what we maybe could do is if we sound like we have some volunteers to do that consolidation, we put that in the Google Drive document or as a document in Google Drive, and then people who want to make amendments to it can do so between now and the next time we have a call room. Maybe we can put something on the agenda for next time just to review any changes to the list, if there are any, and then maybe kind of have a kind of sense of is there consensus in the room that this is the kind of definitive set of requirements that we or features that we will be working with moving forward.
This is Andy. I think that's a good idea.
That's fantastic. Okay. So we have a few more minutes left before the end of this the slot. Is there anything else that we should be queuing up to get done between now and the next call? Because obviously, the pace of this study group is intended to be quite high. This seems a little lightweight for the next week. Is there anything that I don't know if Ram had planned to get anything put into the schedule for the next week. So if anyone from my kennel can comment on that. I haven't seen any of that material, so I don't know. If anyone else has any thoughts about what we can be doing in the next week in addition to the consolidation of all the requirements, Scott.
Yeah, thanks, Gavin. So it goes back, to the topic that Jody brought up before and the note that I sent to the list on Friday. I'd really like to understand if the guidance that was given to the EPDP, which certainly sounded different than what I thought I heard Joran talking to us on Tuesday, if that has any bearing on the work that we're performing. Because it sounds like, it may somewhat alter, you know, our perception of what the operating model is. And anyway, as I said, so I'm really hoping we can get some guidance on that.
Scott, this is Aliza. I've been meaning to respond to you, but I want to make sure I have the answer right before I send it to you. But I think there are a few points I wanted to raise in response to the email that you sent. One, if I remember correctly, you know, our purpose here isn't to vanquish all legal liability for the contracted parties, but rather to diminish it to the extent possible. So that's really what we're trying to determine, is whether the technical solution that this group designed moves the ball any further in that direction. In terms of how controllership is defined, that's a question that the EPDP is tackling. The memo that you circulated raises some questions and perspectives that ICANN.org has on that question, as you raised. I'm not an attorney, and I wasn't involved in drafting that memo, so I can't really speak to the differences that you may have noticed. So that's why I want to make sure I have the right answer for you on that question. But I just wanted to raise those points, and I will be getting back to you soon with a more fulsome reply. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. Greatly appreciated.
Andy?
Yes. So I agree with Scott. Some clarification on what is meant there would be great. I just want to say that it was my understanding, based on the call with Yaron, that the determination of who a controller is actually a very complicated matter, and also somewhat dependent on the judgment of the DPA. And so I don't know if the EDP, whatever they are, I don't know. I mean, they can make a suggestion, but I think when it comes down to it, it's really a matter of legal, a legal interpretation. Yes, I think clarification would be great. I'm not sure if we should get hung up on it, though.
Thanks, Andy. Yeah, I agree. I think, as I said before, we should try and maintain our focus on the technical side of things, and let other people worry about the legal and policy things. And if it turns out we design a system that isn't legal or isn't in line with policy, then so be it. Lisa.
Thanks, Kevin. And like I said, I'm happy to get more clarity for this group on those questions. I just had a couple of other small points to raise, since we only have a couple of minutes left on this call. One, in terms of the notes from our face-to-face meeting, which I circulated to the list last week, I wanted to confirm that they were accurate, and I can send that around again with the action items and notes from this meeting, but we just wanted to make sure that everything we captured in there was accurate, as well as whatever we captured from this meeting, which we'll send around. Just to confirm for next week's action items, I heard Andy say that you had volunteered to combine the requirements into a single document. Was there another volunteer? I didn't quite catch that.
Well, so technically I volunteered.
Or your volunteer.
Yeah, that's both of us, Aliza.
Got it. Thank you.
Okay, Lisa, thank you for that. So we have just under 3 minutes more. Is there any other business or anything else that people have to be discussed in a short time? Otherwise, we can probably bring this to an end. Okay, I think we're done.
Thank you, everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Thank you,
thanks, everyone.